education and the academics. And our guests that are here today. We have invited the Northwest to come and take us through in terms of their state. My apologies, and I was looking at him. And I was really honestly looking at him. My apologies not to myself. You are a what?
A victim.
A victim. No, I thought it was someone from Gonzo. No, thank you. We invited them with an understanding that obviously they were put under administration, and obviously this the house, if I can say, that has got the responsibility, and where they really account to is the NCOP, which I'm of the understanding that they had some interactions with it, looking through the channel of Parliament. But that does not mean that as the portfolio committee we are not to invite them for Northwest leadership in the sector to take us through where are they now. And I think we are at that stage. And I hope that it will really give us some more light. Yes, we will ask questions. But more and above, it's really not about you only coming to make a presentation and Ms. Hunter. It's our concern about the people of Northwest aren't really receiving services as outlined in the Constitution. That's what our responsibility and a concern. So we are we are at the stage, and with that we welcome you, MSK, and your team. What we then do with the in-house will coming to two, which is the introduction. Members, they know how to do that. And for the benefit of those that may be coming for the first time in the committee, we use the mic and tell us your name and where you are coming from. Your name and surname. Phones are off, on silent. Pictures are not taken, except those that are designated to do that, and we'll hear when they introduce themselves. I'm Lindelwa Thondwa, I'm the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Health. Next to me is Biogaz Mashalamba, secretary to the committee. The extreme left is Noel Thandolele, who is the secretary of the study group of the African National Congress. Moses, who is part of the research team. Mali, who is also committee assistant. Lindo Kuhle, who is our content advisor. And the last one is Ube, who is our researcher. Over to you, Honorable Members.
Good morning, Honorable. My name is Fishing Salem.
Good morning. My name is Rachel Adams.
Good morning. My name is Nonsan Kamu Vendala, member of the committee.
Good morning. My name is Mulelo Mpondo, member of the committee.
Good morning, Jimena. My name is Patricia Kopani. I'm a member of the Portfolio Committee. Thank you.
Good morning, Dr. Susan Kemekwayo, member of Committee on Health. Thank you.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Lindy Walton. I'm a member of this portfolio.
Asanda, who is the researcher for the Study Group of the National Congress. I will hand over to the PM and his team.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, members, Joe Butler, Deputy Minister for Health.
Good morning, Honorable Members. Mahona Masike, MEC Health Group of Students.
Good morning, Honorable Chair and Members. I'm Jeanette Hunter. I'm the DDG for Primary Health here at the National Department of Health, but appointed Administrator for the Northwest Department of Health on the 26th of April 2018, and I suppose I'll be an Administrator until the administration is commanded to stop by the NCOC.
Dumelang, good morning. I'm Conrad Motlhabane. I'm the DDG for Health and Services.
Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, good morning. My name is Beta Hambu Maleka, the Chief Financial Officer, Northwest Department of Health.
Good morning, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. My name is Beta Hambu. I'm the Acting Director for Health and Services.
Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, Deputy Minister, MEC. I'm Johan de Klerk, Technical Advisor and Chief Director in the Infrastructure Unit.
Good morning, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. My name is Bo Redlingais. I'm the Director for Emergency Medical Services for Anesthesiology and Disaster Management in the Northwest Department of Health.
Good morning, Honourable Members. My name is Linda Zimande. I'm the Acting Chief Director for Infrastructure, Northwest Health.
Good morning, Honorable Members, Senior Managers from the Department, Deputy Minister, Honorable Chair. My name is Lebohang Sebaku, Parliamentary Liaison Officer.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Tala Castro from the Office of the Deputy Minister.
Good morning,
Jan Gerder from District 4.
Good morning, I'm Tamar Khan from Business Day.
Good morning, I'm Kiswa Sinagane from PNG.
Thank you very much. MEC will hand over to you.
The progress made, what has been happening in the first quarter. We also have non-financial performance, financial performance, and we will also present to you Section 101B intervention activities. Just as a matter of introduction, Chair, the presentation provides the departmental performance of the first quarter 2018-19, and of the 102 indicators, 80 were due for reporting, of which 51, 63.8, achieved their targets. And major factors contributing to challenges includes the following, but not limited to labor unrest, industrial action, as you may know. We had one of the longest strikes, 3 months this year, and shortage of resources. And the summary, just in summary, no details yet, the details will follow. Program 1 for the first quarter under review. no indicators due for reporting, and program 2 for the quarter under review, 20 out of 37 indicators achieved, 54.1% achievement. Program 3 for the quarter under review, 1 out of 4 indicators achieved. Program 4, regional hospitals for the quarter under review, 7 out of 9 indicators achieved. Program 4, specialized hospitals for the quarter under review, 9 out of 9 indicators achieved. Program 5, tertiary hospitals for the quarter under review, 13 out of 13 indicators achieved. Program 6, for the quarter under review, 0 out of 1 indicator achieved. Program 7, for the quarter under review, 0 out of 1 indicators achieved. And program 8, for the quarter under review, 1 out of 6 indicators achieved. I will hand over to the administrators to go through the details from now henceforth. Thank you very much, Chair.
Honourable members, I'm taking you through the presentation, and the first one is the indication of the number of indicators in the 2017-18. This is done to make a comparison of the same quarter in last year as compared to the same quarter of this year. You indicate that in the 2017-2018, we had 91 indicators, of which 56 indicators were on target. When we looked into the same quarter of 2018-19 comparatively with the 2017-18, we see that in the 2018-19, we had the indicators that have been on the target are 63% as compared to 60% of the indicators in the 2017-2018. The whole program is indicative of the two colors, green indicating where the indicators, the targets that we've set for ourselves of all the indicators that have been mentioned, have been achieved equal or more than. Where we have the red color is where the target for the quarter, not necessarily for a year, has not been achieved. I would, for the purpose of this presentation, concentrate on the indicators that we have not fully achieved under the program District Health Services. With District Health Services, Honourable Chair, I'm starting with the district hospital, that is our level one hospitals that are providing the services. There we looked at indicators of inpatient bed utilization, which indicates how our beds are occupied. And the indication here is that we were targeting a range of 60 to 75%. We have not achieved that in the first quarter. We have achieved 53.1%. This was mainly, like the introductory slide indicates, mainly because of the strike that we have experienced during the first quarter, particularly from the middle February up to almost the end of May. Here, the patients, in other words, patients were either sent home in view of unpredictable situation whether the nurses would be there or not. So rather the hospitals discharge patients to the care of the parents and the care of the community health worker in many instances of that, and giving them also time to return. We could not also achieve in terms of expenditure per patient day equivalent. This was due to accruals that we have. The second point that the MEC indicated was the shortage of fund. Around September last year already, our money was finished. So all other payments were on hold. The next program that I want to indicate is a program on TB, HIV, and TB control, STIs, sexually transmitted
infections. If with this one, I would only take two of these indicators. In the slides that we were given, we indicate what the challenges are as well as what the department is trying to do to remedy the situation, particularly what is it that we are doing now in the second quarter. With TB MDR treatment success rate, we were intending to achieve above 60%. We have not achieved that. It was 49.2%, and this was due to the high death rates, and particularly where patients are lost to follow up. We don't know where they are. Either they have been given the wrong addresses and we cannot follow them up, and they are totally out of the system. And in that area, that's where we have a problem. We have already put in place in the second quarter to have a DOT supporters, people who would have a patient and a supporter appointed. And these are some of those that we have put in place. Similarly, those are the remedial actions for the area of ART as well as for the area of TB treatment. I'm moving now to the next program. This program that I'm moving to is the Maternal Child Women's Health Program. This program, we have some few indicators that we are wanting to track to make sure that maternal health as well as child health are protected and that no women die when giving birth. And we track this by the antenatal first visit, that people should come to the facilities before they are 20 weeks. In this area, our target is to have more than 68%. We were close, but not there. We are at 66.6%. And this has been an issue that we are dealing with to try to see why mothers don't report their pregnancy early. Some are not saying they are not sure. Some are saying they first go to the GP but never come to our facility. We have a program where we are making connection with the GPs within the area that when a woman has reported to their facility, there must be a referral letter to the facility so that we can then have on our record that the patient was seen, the woman was seen before 20 weeks. Other indicators, like after birth, you can see that we have been in control and have achieved those indicators. Immunization is a one-part area in child health and is dependent on two issues. The information on the mothers. We have not achieved above 75% of the immunization. Challenge we have was that availability of vaccine during that time, including BCG, which is given at birth for the protection of a child against TB developing or succumbing to TB in the later life. So in this was the area. The other area that was a problem again in the measles area was the issue of diluent being not being available, something that is mixing with vaccines to make it fluid. So that was also a challenge, but we have developed a program with the help of the National Department of Health for mopping up, in other words, catch up program for immunization. The rest of the other indicators in this area, honorable members, are achieved. I must also move to the next slide, which is slide 16. This is the area, again, where we have to, it's our intention to have maternal mortality in our facilities going below 120 per 100,000. We are at 126. We are not there yet. But when we analyze the causes of death of those women that we have a quarterly meeting where MHC chairs, we found that some of the causes are non-pregnancy related, but HIV combination has been identified as one of the areas why people are dying, or obstetric hemorrhages, where there is lack of skill, and we have started building up the skills of the medical doctors and nurses to be able to manage hemorrhages during delivery. The greens I will pass because those were the areas where there is an achievement. The slide number 17 deals again on the mother, maternal and child. With this slide, I want to just to look into the 2 points. Cervical cancer screening, the cancers are going up, and we are intending to make sure that 65% of the women that are coming, we must be able to have them screened above 30 years old. We also wanted to check whether the young people younger than 19 years are not giving birth, so that our school health services or adolescent youth friendly service policy is followed. And we find that those are the challenges under there. We attribute the non-achievement of this indicator of cervical screening to lack of access. During the strike, during that 2 months, people were unsure of coming to their clinics. It was a reality. People were not coming to our clinics because there was strike. People were not coming because they either will be giving another date. So we are trying to catch up in this month with that. And also with the those young people below 19 delivering in our facility, we are accelerating the implementation of the policy, as well as making sure that we strengthen the She Conquers program. Honorable members, I move to emergency medical service, which is a slide that indicates the number of indicators there. We have used the 4 indicators to track our performance in terms of emergency medical services. And in this program, we have only achieved 1 of the 3 indicators. And this was there mainly because response time within 15 minutes, urban area was not reached, as well as response time of 40 minutes in rural areas was not achieved. And this was due to the time here was mainly because of the lack of staff. In other instances, during the time of the first quarter, some licenses had expired. There was no workforce to track and do corrective actions for getting the licenses done. So some of the vehicles were actually grounded. But we have since then moved quickly to that. Now, I would move to say that level program 5, which is the one that I'm going to, is where all the indicators have been achieved, 100%, and program 4, and specialized hospitals. They have achieved their targets to date. Program 6, here is the nurse training program, 1 indicator only. It was not achieved, and the reason for that was because of the students were not successful in their assessment, and some were now given the opportunity to redo the work and pass. So, and we have a number of now students that have now would be graduating on Friday this week. Program 7, which is a healthcare service support services. With this program, I indicate 1 is the percentage availability of essential medical supply. Instead of that reaching the target of 85, we were at 72%. And this was mainly because of suppliers not supplying us due to their accounts being on hold because of the non-payment. And we have paid accrual so far, and we hope that now the program will be solved. Facility management. Of those projects that have not been completed, we were supposed to have completed 1 program. It was not completed. the contractor has not completed the program, and we have had already the meeting in July with that contractor, and proper management and contract management has been put in place. If I can, I want to move to the one and the last one that indicates the number of health facilities that have undergone major or minor refurbishment. In this one also, we were intending to have one of that facilities been done, but it has not been done. The meeting was scheduled. We had a meeting in July, and the contractor, of course, is now scheduled to start and close the program. The last area, there is a number of business cases submitted to Public Investment Corporation. In our presentation also with the Portfolio Committee in the province, the department has already taken a decision that they would remove that from the indicators, as this is no longer our intention to continue with it after discussions with the Portfolio Committee, and the relevant processes will be followed. I think I have concluded the non-financial presentation and then the financial. Yes.
Thank you, Chairperson. I will now present the financial performance for the first quarter of the 2018-19 financial year. Our spending was 20.2% instead of 25%, so we underperformed by 4.8%. Under equitable share, the spending was at 20.7%, and for the conditional grant, it was 18.1%. The reason being that our spending started in the month of May. Because of the labor unrest, our budget was loaded towards the end of April. And our revenue collection for the quarter was 79.6%. The target was 20 million, and we collected 15.9 million. The breakdown of our expenditure per program and per economic classification. For program one, for the first quarter, the spending was 15.2%. For program two, it was 20.1%. For program three, 18.2%. Program four, it was 21.7%. Program five, 22.6%. Program six, 9.7%. Program 7, 8.4%, and Program 8, 25.9%. All the programs underperformed except Program 8. And for economic classifications, compensation of employees, the spending was at 23.2%. For goods and services, it was 13.9%. The reason I've already indicated that the spending started in the month of May. Under transfers and subsidies, departmental agencies and account, the spending was 0%. Under households, 3.2%. And for capital payments, building and other fixed structures was 32.2%. And machinery and equipment spending was at 0.8%. The next slide gives the narrative of the performance per program. For program one, the accruals that have been declared is 4.1 million. And for program two, the accruals declared is 355.9 million. Our biggest spending under this program is security services, and it's followed by NHLS. For program three, our accruals declared is 12.7 million. For program four, the accruals declared is 65.4 million. For program five, the spending was at 22.2% as indicated, and the accruals as 166.7 million. And for program six, the accruals declared is 4.5 million. And the reason the spending was less in the first quarter is because of the payment that we made to the universities and the Nelson Mandela Fidel Castro program. It normally happens in the second quarter. So the spending will improve in the current quarter. For program 7, the accruals declared is 195.5 million and 64 million was committed already. For program 8, the accruals declared was 187.1 million. So in total, the accruals for the 17-18 financial year was 992 million. The next slide gives a breakdown of the first quarter spending for the CHCs. In total, the spending was at 20%. For COE, it was 23%. Goods and services, 13%. Households, 8%. Interest and rent on land, 69%. Spending for the clinics, it was at 22%. Compensation of employees, 23%. Goods and services, 17%. Machinery and equipment, it was at 2%. For district hospitals, the spending was at 23%. Machinery and equipment was at 1%. And for provincial hospitals, the overall spending was at 21%, with machinery and equipment at 1%. For tertiary hospitals, the overall spending was 23%, and for machinery equipment, the expenditure was at 0%. The next slide gives the analysis of our infrastructure performance. In total, we have 123 projects. These are maintenance projects. The overall spending was 26%. Under maintenance and repairs, we have 46 projects, and the spending was at 6%. For new or replaced infrastructure, the total number of projects was 28. The spending is at 39%. Rehabilitation, renovation, and refurbishment, the total number of projects is 18. The spending was at 0%. And the upgrading and additions, 9 projects, spending was at 30%. And for non-infrastructure projects, it's 22%. And the spending was at 0%. Moving to the conditional grants, the overall expenditure for the first quarter was 18.1%, with human papillivirus vaccine grant at 0%. The reason being that the program starts in the second quarter to vaccine the students in our schools. So the first grant, comprehensive HIV and AIDS, the spending was at 13.9%. EPWP integrated grant at 6.2%. Health facility revive grant overperformed at 26.8%. HPTD grant at 23.5%. NTSG at 17.5%. And social sector EPWP incentive grant at 22.9%. The next slide gives the narrative of the performance of the grant. For comprehensive HIV and AIDS, the overall under-expenditure was as a result of the delay in the payment of invoices due to the strike. For EPWP, the recruitment process started in May when we returned back from the strike that took place for the 3 months. Health facility revive grant, the reason for the over-expenditure is as a result of the payment of the accruals. And for HPTD, some of the suppliers were on hold, reason being that on the CSD, you find that they changed their banking details, so when we process the payment, it puts them on hold. So they need to update their details also on our OCA system so that we can be able to process their payment. The other reason was that the procurement of machinery equipment, the process was underway to procure the equipment. The specifications were submitted to our supply chain management unit for processing the purchasing of those equipment. As I indicated for HPV, the program starts in the second quarter, hence the expenditure was at 0%. And for NTSG, the process is underway to procure a CT scan for JST Hospital in Rustenburg, so the expenditure will improve in the next coming months. And the social sector EPW incentive grant, the community health workers were recruited and the expenditure will improve with the adjustment also of the basic salary of 3.5 thousand per month. With regard to our revenue performance, we under-collected by 4 million. Reason being that we couldn't, during the strike, we couldn't submit accounts to people who were owing us the money, and we couldn't even submit accounts to medical schemes because we normally do it electronically. But for the second quarter, the performance is improving. I thank you, Chairperson.
Chairperson, we would want to ask the administrator to take us through the service delivery platform and take us through Section 101B progress report, which is why she's here. But just a matter of introduction, what we have is a service delivery platform that works as a system. That we've got community-based services, we've got community health workers, school health, environmental health. We've got clinical services and health facilities, diagnosis, paraclinical services, medicine supplies, emergency services. In other words, these rugby balls are what patients go through. That is a part of the system. And this is underpinned by training, communication and collaboration, at the end of which is quality. Whatever we do, I mean, honorable members, we aim to have quality of care. So to go throughout this whole system, there's a referral system. In other words, you cannot leave a smaller clinic to a community health care system, community health care center, from a community health care center to a district hospital, to a regional hospital, to a tertiary hospital without being referred. So there is a referral system. So this whole green thing here is a referral system that takes patients throughout this delivery platform. What we add again is that there's management and administrative processes, finance and supply chain management, human resource management and legal services, infrastructure, information management, security system, leadership, governance, and community participation. If you look at this slide, it represents what we call the system of healthcare, that all these things must be there together for us to have a delivery healthcare system. None can do without the other. They're integrated, interconnected, and collaborationist in approach. Thank you, Chair. I will then ask the administrator to take us through the Section 101B progress report. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair and honourable members, for the opportunity. So just to speak to the North Health Department of Health in terms of the service delivery platform that the MEC introduced for us. To say specifically for the North West Department of Health, when we talk about the community-based services, the North West Department of Health is doing well with school health. It's got a strong school health service delivery program, and that was before we even came as a Section 100 intervention. With the assistance of the Section 100 intervention, the Northwest Department of Health became the first province to implement a national policy for community health workers. We were one of the first provinces assisted again by the intervention to correct that stipend in terms of Resolution 1 of 2018 that moved the stipend for everybody to 3,500 rand a month. And we also assisted to adjust the remuneration of community health workers for the previous 2 years. That was part of the dissatisfaction, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, of why the community health workers
have joined and they had swollen the numbers of the striking employees was because for 2 years there was no adjustment to their remuneration for the work. So we had dug up the ministerial determinations from the Minister of Labour and made those adjustments. So that program is going well at the moment. But environmental health, Chair, in the Northwest Department of Health and even in the province is non-existent. It's a service we have to build up through this Section 100 intervention. And you can see it when you go to the hospitals. Waste management, I'm sure, when the Office of Health Standards Compliance comes, you would have seen that waste management in the yards of hospitals and clinics is a big problem. You can feel that absence of environmental health. To move on from community-based services to services in facilities, clinic services and CHCs, the Northwest Department of Health only has 40% of its clinics ideal, which means in 60% of the clinics, and it mirrors what happens in the country, because we'll remember that Gauteng is doing very well for the ideal clinic. I think they've almost got, they've got more than 70, almost close to 80% of their clinics are ideal. And the Northwest stands at 40. I think Limpopo is lower. So Limpopo, Northwest, and Free State, and Western Cape is bringing down the average for the country to 40%. But let me return to focus on the Northwest Department of Health, where only 40% of the clinics are ideal, which means 60%. In 60% of our facilities, our health workers are working in conditions that frustrate them on a daily basis. Hosi Motlebane, my colleague next to me, presented our performance in terms of health programs. In all 9 provinces, there are workers at the moment in clinics and hospitals doing their best. Yes, they are servicing our people, and therefore we can come to you and present progress on indicators. The performance of the Northwest Department of Health, if you look at program performance, TB cure rates, immunization coverage, PMTCT rates, it doesn't look bad if you compare them to the other 8 provinces. But like I'm sure in all other provinces, it's at the cost of frustrating our workers. It's not nice for workers either when they are faced with long queues of people. It's not nice for the workers to work in dilapidated physical structures. And this is what is happening if only 40% of your primary healthcare facilities are ideal. When we move to hospitals, Chair and Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, some of the best practices, and I'm very careful with that word best, because you can't use best if you haven't empirically compared it to other areas. So let me say some of the good practices in this country comes out of Northwest Hospitals. Klaasdorp Sepong, the complex consisting of Klaasdorp Hospital and Sepong Hospital in Klaasdorp. JST Hospital in Rustenburg, Job Shimankana Tebani Hospital, Freiburg Hospital. Even my king that's so overcrowded with poor conditions, perform some of the state-of-the-art procedures in this country, if not in the world. But again, it's because we have dedicated doctors, dedicated nurses, dedicated workers like physios and occupational therapists that work under trying conditions. The DG and I visited Klaasdorp Hospital. The renal unit, and we've assisted now to sort it out physically, had grave problems. The theatres have grave problems. But it's because we have dedicated workers in South Africa that things carry on, and we can report on health outcomes, but we have to change the environment. We have to improve the infrastructure. We have to improve the staffing in terms of numbers and skills. I see the conversation in the country is again about the swollen public service. Yes, public service may be swollen, but we don't have the people in the right places. So we'll have to look DM, because you're a national political leader, and I'm trusting that you and the political leaders in this room will shape that conversation. Yes, we do want the country to succeed in terms of our foreign debt, but we cannot squeeze the health department any further in terms of not having the right numbers and the right skills in the right places. Emergency medical diagnostic services are fine, Chair. In fact, the Northwest, I think, is one of the shining provinces when it comes to paying the National Health Laboratory Services. You know, there's always that dispute between provincial departments of health and the NHLS, but the Northwest has been up to date with their payments. So our diagnostic services are fine. It's just sometimes we fall down in terms of not having the equipment, but we're pushing that as well now. When it comes to emergency medical services, it's also depleted in the Northwest. We don't have our own staff, and that is why the province has turned to private companies, and it's showed not to be working, so we need to build that. The MEC told me there's three priorities that he has for the intervention. It's we must get our medicines availability to be better, EMS, and we must sort out the issues at Maikeng Provincial. So it's not the chance that EMS is one of his priorities. We have to build a departmental EMS delivery unit. And we could share those specifics at another day. So Chair, these rugby balls, as MEC has called them, is dependent on, yes, a good referral system. And the colleagues, the service delivery colleagues in the Northwest has a good referral system. They understand their system and it's been followed. Just think we need to improve the transport for patients from one level to the next, and that's an area we have to invest in, is to make sure that we have transport for our patients from one area to the next. And then, of course, these administrative processes at the bottom, management of administrative processes, finance and supply chain management, human resource management, our provision of infrastructure, information management, security services, and leadership governance, and community participation needs to be improved. Talking about leadership governance and community participation, when it comes to our hospital boards and our clinic committees, as an outsider coming in, I must say Northwest is also doing better than most other provinces in terms of having functional hospital boards and community and clinic committees, and that's driven by the MEC personally, and I think the department is doing very well there. Chair, it is also ironic. You will remember when ANC started government in 1994, one of the things the government prioritized was infrastructure. Because I think the government then understood that they had a perfect picture of the fact that infrastructure needed huge improvements in health and education, but let's stick to health. And there was sufficient funding made available since the inception of our government in this country in 1994. But we didn't have the capacity to spend the money, and a lot of infrastructure money from health department resulted into what was called savings, and it actually went into that buffer fund for the first Minister of Finance that we had. So we can see how that lack of capacity has compounded the situation such that we are faced with such poor infrastructure in our clinics and our hospitals. Now, the irony is National Treasury and Provincial Treasuries in the past 3 years have worked together and they've beefed up capacity in the provinces. Other provinces, to what extent they succeeded, I don't know, but in the Northwest they have succeeded. We have the capacity now to improve our infrastructure. Now we don't have the funding. And that capacity that the Northwest Department of Health has is evident if you look at it. It's the only program that's spent on track. For the first quarter they were just above 25 and in some areas 26. So if we could get that additional funding that we need to fix all the clinics and what's wrong in our hospitals. Incidentally, just as an example, JST, in spite of doing good work, the casualty is closed. The casualty has been closed by the Department of Labor because it poses a threat to the health workers. Let me move on, Chair. I spoke too long, so the presentation seems to be frozen. So, for the intervention, we do have a detailed plan, Chair, of every activity. But I just summarized here, and if a committee requests, we could send that detailed plan through the committee secretary. We have 120 activities, of which 29 and 24% have been completed. We've got 47% of the activities in progress, and 24% of these activities have not yet started, and 4% are actually behind schedule. Chair, one of the priorities for the Section 100 intervention, because when we got there, the workers were still outside agitating in the streets, was to bring about labor peace. So with the help of the IMTT, the Interministerial Task Team set up by the President, we got the workers, now I'll focus on the workers of the Department of Health, to return on the 21st of May. But this peace is still very, very fragile. I'm running around sometimes like a headless chicken in the province from one facility to the next and then back to the provincial office, because the workers still periodically go out on strike. And the main thing is that we have not sorted out the issue around performance management and development yet. It took us a bit of time because we wanted to set up an external panel to review performance management and development in the department. And we were keen to have an external panel so that the workers could see it as an independent opinion coming from outside, and so that they adhere to the findings of the panel either way. But another reason why is also we don't have a strong labor relations management unit in the department. There's huge vacancies in that department, and it's left with very junior staff, and that is also something which we will have to attend to going forward. So we did the situation analysis in terms of the PMDS situation, because it's one of the reasons why workers were very, very dissatisfied. And we found that indeed there was no record of activity for persons, for 7,019 persons in the 15-16 financial year, and for 6,199 persons in the 16-17 financial year. We've developed a template to determine the reasons. The template was filled in by the districts. Some of the districts are still outstanding, and we are following that up. And as I say, the minister is about to appoint this external team that will review the PMDS situation. Chair, of course, amongst health workers, a big dissatisfaction is that they feel they are overburdened by vacancies. In the Northwest Department of Health, before the intervention, no vacancies were filled for the previous 4 years. So it was one of our first priorities. We determined the number of vacancies. We looked at what money is available. We prioritized upfront $93 million to fill priority posts. Those were for us our EPWP workers, the further training for the Nelson Mandela Fidel Castro Medical Program, and students for specific specialties, because we want to continue to do good work in our hospitals. And then, of course, we also had to make sure upfront we have money for the interns, so that we don't have a problem with intern take-in. And so the priority list for filling was approved by the Minister of Health on recommendation from the NEC. And the first batch of advertisements were placed on the 8th of July, and subsequent batches followed. And we are now in the process of filling these posts. This is just showing the funding that we had available for filling the vacant posts, and then, of course, our priorities as I've listed them. And then the rest of the money, the $93 million, was then left to fill priority posts throughout the province. We have 4,220 vacancies in total, Chair. We prioritize those. Priority one meant year one, this year. Priority two was for next year. Priority three was for the following year. And if you add those three priority numbers, you will see that you don't even come to 4,220, but it's because we had to prioritize within the budget that was available. Chair, something that the committee will be interested in is the next slide, to show over the four districts and at provincial office, we have prioritized clinical posts. So the biggest of number of posts, 134 out of the 222 are for clinical posts, which means doctors, nurses, physios, nutritions, and so on. And I'll move on for that because the slide also shows the money that was assigned. And you will see the total goes much more than the 93 million that we had. But it's because by virtue of procurement processes following time, some of these people may only be appointed in the next financial year. And we'll probably overspend a little bit on COE, and we have to. If we don't, Treasury won't take us seriously. They will simply tell us, you have that budget and you lived within that budget and you are not getting more. So it's a calculated risk that we are taking. Another reason why workers were grossly unhappy was because they hadn't received their overtime payment for some time. So EMS payments we did immediately for the few emergency medical services offices we had. But for other overtime work, the Minister of Health actually had to apply to the Minister of Public Service to relax a rule that DPFA had implemented. And that rule was implemented for good reason. You don't want the health workers to burn themselves out. Any workers for that matter. And DPSA then implemented a regulation that says no one can do overtime for more than 30% of standard time. But, Chair, in our hospitals, if we have to stick to that rule, we'll have wards at night without staff. So, unfortunately, staff are made to work more than 30% because you talk to people. People are people, and especially people who choose to become health workers, are particularly humanities-oriented. So even though someone has worked and you say to him, you know, what if, what so-and-so, ICU is not covered tonight, can you come in? Those people are going to come in because they care about the people lying in those beds. And so you ask them to be human and to come and help, but we don't reward them. So people have been working without getting paid for the overtime they do. Fortunately, the Minister of DPSA then gave us approval, and we are now in the process of working with Treasury because this is going to be unauthorized spending because it already happened, and then we asked for permission after the fact. And if we pay the workers, it's going to be unauthorized, so we have to get permission from Treasury to pay that. And, Chair, it's for this reason that I say, as the administrator, MEC reminds me from time to time that I was also appointed by the National Minister of Finance through the MEC for Finance in the province as the accounting officer. The buck stops with me. I have to make that decision to overspend a little bit on COE because the vacancies in key positions are grave. We cannot continue to make people work overtime for more than 30% of the standard time because we're adding to burnout. So there's got to be a massive reorganization of how Northwest Department of Health is staffed. And, Chair, I want to raise one of them here because it's some of the things that people will raise with their unions, and the unions will also raise it further up. In the Northwest Department of Health, we've got four districts. Those districts are further built, broken up into about 19 sub-districts. There's a dispute. Some people say 17, others 18, 19 sub-districts. But there's a peculiar thing, Chair, that each sub-district has about four local area managers. Some sub-districts have three clinics to manage. But you have four managers on quite a senior level. So there was also maldistribution of facilities over the sub-districts. For example, in Moses Kotane, you would find a sub-district with 50 clinics, while Tetleng in the same Bojanala has three, is one of those. So we can't change boundaries, geographic boundaries, but we had to say to the manager managing three clinics, no, take 20 from Moses Kotane, then you have 23, and the Moses Kotane sub-district manager stays with 50. But within that sub-district, there was on average about four people, and I'm saying, what are the four people doing when only 40% of clinics are in any case ideal? So those people have to be redistributed. It's better to bring them down to facility manager level and make them operational managers. I'm just using that as one example to say Sometimes we have a lot of bodies, but they are not in the right place. And I can't be overspending on COE to bring nurses and doctors while there's managers roaming around and I don't know what they are doing. And it's discussed with MEC, and MEC is in total alignment, and the managers that sit here. So the financial management of the department was also found to be wanting. Even now, when you look at the office of the COE, because the CFO, you know, the provincial portfolio committee on health has asked us, myself and the MEC, when are we starting to charge people for all the supply chain transgressions? One of the key supply chain transgressions in the department is that we virtually have no valid contracts. We are making payments against expired contracts. Now again, this has been raised with a coordinator of the IMTT in the DPME. We've also taken it to Treasury. As an administrator, as an accounting officer, I'm perpetuating irregular expenditure because I'm making payments against expired contracts. To give you one example, one of such expired contracts is accommodation for doctors at the JST Hospital in Rustenburg. If I don't pay the accommodation, like I was hanging back a bit, the landlord will evict those doctors and they will have no choice but to go home from where they come, and then I have no doctors in the hospital. So I have to keep paying accommodation against an expired contract as we are pushing fast to re-advertise the tender. Another issue that actually reached the newspapers, and you would have seen it, is that the securities walked out of our hospitals. Our hospitals were left without security, especially Mafeking Provincial Hospital, and when the securities walked out, the staff walked out. Nurses and doctors said, but we can't stay here without security. Some patients are aggressive, some patients are threatening us. Again, I'm paying security services against a lapse contract because I need the security services. And let me tell you, Chair and Honorable Members, those contracts are expired for more than 18 months, some more than 2 years. Why they were left, I don't know. But to get back to the question of why don't you charge some people? In government, before you can charge people, you must show as the employer that you've given them the tools to work with, that you have provided mentoring, and that you actually took people through progressive discipline before you take a serious step of charging them. When you look at the office of the CFO, Ms. Bertha Maleka sitting here, it's devoid of people. How do you have one DDG and then deputy directors running the office of the CFO? Chief director posts are vacant. Director posts are vacant. Okay, I'm going to move. I think I spoke to primary healthcare services when I spoke to the rugby ball. I spoke about hospital services. I spoke about EMS. So challenges, I think I've raised them as I was going along. So I was talking a lot, but I was talking to the slides here. Institutional incapacity, I also spoke about it when I spoke. I used the CFO's office as an example. I think I also highlighted that our labor relations unit as total doesn't have the capacity because there's no people to do the work. But we have activities for each of these. The MEC has already approved our turnaround plan for EMS, and it is being implemented. We will shortly bring the turnaround plan for medicines availability and also for turning hospitals around. Because although we're focusing on Mafeking Provincial Hospitals, the interventions that we will recommend for Mafeking Provincial Hospital can be implemented across all hospitals. Chair, if I was looking at Northwest Department of Health as a business entity, which we should look at government institutions as business entities because they are managing the money of the people. I can tell you because of the ANC government, plans are in place. There are always plans. The problem is always with the implementation of the plan. And where we are failing is that we don't have the right processes and we don't have the people. Number four, I'm just using some management construct, 5 P's of management. Number four, possessions. If you look at possessions and profits, you could look at our assets and our budget. Oftentimes the budget is sufficient. Oftentimes it's not the budget that we get that bedevils a proper implementation, but it is our processes and it is our people issues. And those are the two things that the Session 100 intervention is currently focusing on, Chair. Thank you, Chair. And thank you, managers. I did speak to those things on the following slides.
Thank you very much. Well, the noise is beyond our control. Something that is happening in floors that are not even managed by Parliament. So we can't send somebody to request them to stop. So we'll try to compete with it. I think we've come to the end of the presentation. What we will do now, we will then allow members to ask questions. There is the presentation, honorable members. Honorable Maisel, honorable Kembekwayo, honorable Wilson, honorable Kobana, honorable Gonzo, in that order for now. Honorable Maisel.
Thank you, Chair. My first question was going to be, why were you put under administration? But I think it's now would be an academic type of question now. You are there, and just in my career. Second question is that your targets, especially the first season four about summary of your achievements, your health targets, and all those targets are not, gives an idea that the previous year you had more targets. This year you have almost half of those targets, if I checked well. And then you cannot say you achieved something if you didn't even achieve half of what you had the last time. Maybe I got it all mixed up. But it looks like you halved your target, fine. And then you didn't even fulfill the half of the half. So something is wrong somewhere. It means that the outputs are very, not very useful. To say the least. What can I say? Material or in the mortality of TB places is very, very high. And but then on the other side, you say you've got a high success rate. Maybe I can see it well as well. But it gives me the impression that my question is, how come you have now a high mortality rate of TB? Notwithstanding that some of the patients have got HIV infection. But still, it's not acceptable. You can see that your rate that is more than your green bars. So there's something wrong that you are not doing well. Maternal and women's health and nutrition. The picture is not very impressive. At one stage you have 100% mortality rate. So maybe you could explain that. What is going on in child mother and child care system treatment in your system? It's not very impressive. We have been in this situation for a long time for us to be regressing. Maybe there are factors that, like, maybe you don't have staff. I mean, I can see that you've got about 4,220 vacancies. And I don't know whether you are running a system, because in health, people are a system. So they are more important than your institution. But if you don't have the people, what are you doing? How do you do it? You are bound to fail, and you can't blame the system for failure when you do put the system in place. Environmental health, well, no need going into that, it's not existent. Human resources, well, you've got a lot. Labor unrest, well, with the parameters here, you are lucky you still have anybody working for you. You should, according to the unrest, the causes of unrest, you are lucky you have somebody working for you. Maybe they're your cousins, they feel pity for you, not because so on. Otherwise, everybody would have gone. You'd have nobody working for you. Performance management and development non-existent. Staffing level, shortage of staff. Lack of equipment and health facilities. Poor infrastructure. Overtime, not paid. Victimization. And, you are bound to have nobody working for you. And then you can't succeed if you don't have the people. Health services are people. Wastage of resources. Looks like there was no caring about the resources. We were just throwing them left and right away. So maybe you could explain why there was such wastage that it caused the collapse of the system. And how do you pay for monthly maintenance for equipment that was new and it never worked? How do you, I don't know, maybe I didn't read it very well, but when I see that you have been paying monthly maintenance for equipment that has never worked, well, it's fraud, to say the least. So small wonder then that there is no poor specification of equipment, making payments against expired contracts. But maybe I'm interested in EMS. Are you still using Buthelezi ambulances, the old quarrel we had with sugar? Are you still doing the same thing, or now that you are under administration? But if you are stuck with that, and you haven't replaced whatever you had lost, I think I just for curiosity's sake, whether you are still using that. Maybe the other questions will come. I just want to be very nice about this. When the next round comes, if your answers are not what I want, then I'll ask you more questions. Thanks.
Honorable Temekwe.
Thank you very much, and thanks for the presentation. My first comment would be on the type of the presentation done. To say we have slides that we received, but what we expected was for you to follow the information as per slide, because somehow we couldn't even know where we are and where we are coming from. So it's better to stick to the information as it is, not to do, you know, intentional information giving to us and cutting out some of the information that we expected to hear from you. Nevertheless, my first point would be based on the information that was given on page 14, that has mention was made on the agreement that was made between the general practitioners and I think it's the hospital or I don't know. But my question would be, how do you investigate whether the women that are affected are informed about the agreement that you have to say that they should be referred to you? Because in some instances you'll find that you have an agreement with the general practitioners who do not communicate the same agreement to the women involved. So my question would be, how sure are you that the very same agreement has been communicated to the affected women? The second one is based on the addressing malaria. And I would still refer to page 18 of the slides where mention was made about Bujanala district only. Northwest does not only consist of Bujanala district. There are a number of districts that falls under Northwest. So my question is, how is the province addressing malaria? How do you address malaria in the whole province, not only doing a selection of the Bujanala district? And further, my question would still be on the question that was asked about the Buthelezi EMS, to say there were reports of private contractors being used for EMS services, whilst over 40 brand new ambulances were lying idle. What is the latest on this matter? And how much is the contract for Buthelezi EMS and Mediosa currently worth? How much was overcharged and how much will be credited back to the department as it has been reflected in slide 59? And lastly, I would ask about the security services, to say what is your plan in regard to insourcing of the security services, since you are experiencing some problems with regard to that. Thank you.
No, thank you, honourable members. Our apologies. I was just going to request a 5 minute break so that we address this thing, this noise. And it's the outside building of here. It's outside. It's not within here. I must have to go out. So we requested the staff to request somebody who's got powers to tell them to stop. I hope it's not going again to disturb us. The next in the list, it's Honorable Wilson.
Thank you, Chairperson. One of the things that's not, and thank you for your presentation, but one of the things that's not highlighted in this presentation is what is the value of the Medico claims you're facing. And what have you paid out on Medico claims already in the last year, if you have, and what is the cost of legal fees, both paid and projected, because that is not budgeted for, and I think we need to understand what your situation is there. And I specifically asked that question because when I look at pages 11, 12, and 13, and I'm tying this into vacancies, allocate each patient a special treatment supporter, allocate each patient a special treatment supporter, allocate each patient a special treatment supporter. This is an HIV, AIDS, STIs, and TB control. You have 4,222 vacancies, only 19 93 million to cover important posts. So I'm not terribly sure how you're going to allocate each patient a special treatment supporter, because you don't have the money to pay them or assist them. But in terms of the medico claims, and I find this most disturbing, is on page 15, diarrhea cases with fatalities, children under 5 years of age, and the challenges due to inadequate review of children with severe dehydration and too much or too little incorrect type of fluid prescribed in the ward. The remedial action there is to monitor implementations of CHIP recommendations. I find that very, very disturbing, because it is indicative that your staff, particularly in these wards, obviously don't know what they're doing if they don't know if they are prescribing too much or too little and children are dying as a result. This will lead to medical claims, which you don't have the budget for and that you can't cover. The same applies on page 16. Maternal mortality and facility ratio due to women who died to HIV, TB, HIV complications, that is understandable, and obstetric hemorrhage. And the remedial action is to follow up on facilities that are not conducting fire drills or simulation of managing a patient with an obstetric emergency. In other words, what we are saying is we don't have the staff or people who can deal with an emergency when a woman comes in with a complication, meaning that she's probably likely to die and this is going to probably be a medical claim in the long term. Neonatal death in facility rate, page 17, due to prematurity, we know that this can happen. Hypoxia, infection, and congenital abnormalities. Again, congenital abnormalities are sometimes out of our hands. However, hypoxia and infection are things we should be able to manage. One is a shortage of oxygen. Do we have the facilities for that? And why are our children getting infections in neonatal wards? The remedial action, their follow-up assessment of personnel trained with on neonatal resuscitation, HBB and MSSM. Well, have they never been assessed? Why are our children dying in these circumstances? And I was not so long ago at the Mahikeng Hospital. I did an oversight there. I'm not surprised people are dying in that hospital, and certainly not in maternal and neonatal. And one of your statements was is that the Excelsior Nursing College is on a stairway and nurses in maternity at Mahikeng are staying away. Those poor staff must be dead on their feet. They must be frantic. It was there that I found women lying on the floor with their newborn babies. It was there that I found mold growing on the walls of that hospital and a boiler that hadn't worked for months. So you've got a completely collapsed infrastructure system there. And these kind of things are highlighting how serious those kind of issues are, because these things are going to lead to claims that we are not going to be able to deal with or pay in the long term. Some of the other concerns I have been raised by my colleagues, but I want to deal with interest on rents and land, which is already at 58% in the first quarter. So what are you going to do when the money runs out? Because you've got a long way to go. You've got another three quarters of the year ahead. You've already spent 58% of your budget. What happens when you run out of the money? Because it's going to happen. And I hear that it's very easy to say, well, we'll just overspend and we'll put Treasury and the department under pressure to provide more. Maybe then they'll understand the situation. Well, we sit in a country whose fiscal crisis right now is up the creek without a paddle. So we must be careful how far we push Treasury and the national departments, because the country is actually bankrupt. So be careful when you go that route. I want to, in light of the fact that we have huge vacancies and no budget, you have declared, though, that one of your priorities is to continue to support the Nelson Mandela Fidel Castro programs, that are students on that program. We have a shortage of staff. We have an awful lot of unemployed doctors and some specialists in the country who we should be accommodating because our health system has collapsed. Why are we not spending that money to employ the currently unemployed qualified doctors to uplift our medical services? Because there are lots out there, we know that. Lots of people are qualified, doctors and things qualified in recent years that haven't got positions yet because of the high vacancy rate and lack of budgets. Surely our priority, number one, should be the primary health care of South Africans and using that money to get doctors in, employ them, equip your hospitals, get your specialists in, provide the care, and deal with and resource those positions and address the Cuban students, the Russian students, whatever students we've got at the moment. And I'm not saying they mustn't be there, but I think the budget is skewed, and I think we need to assess the priority, because the priority is a collapsed health system with no doctors, huge vacancy rates. We need budgets to provide for that. That's one of the areas where it should be coming out of. That's a concern for me. I think, and the other query is BCG vaccines. We're finding BCG vaccines in just about every single hospital and clinic that we are going to has no BCGs. What are we doing to address the situation? Measles, mumps, and rubella are serious issues, and currently overseas there is a measles outbreak. We're going to land into a big trouble with our babies in this country with those kind of infections, particularly as lots of them are malnourished, underweight, coming from poor communities where malnutrition is a huge situation. If we cannot vaccinate them, we are going to lose them if we have an outbreak. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the presentation. Chair, having listened to the presentation, and some of us been having opportunity to go to Northwest, it's clear that the people are suffering, there's a problem in Northwest. It is only when you agree that there's a problem, then you can take the right decision. Chair, my worry, or let me say, start by saying, the problem regarding the labor unions, what is the progress in terms of the relationship between the labor unions and the department? Because I remember on the 24th of April, I visited Klerksdorp Hospital. I also visited Kuno Clinic in Stilfontein. Kuno Clinic in Stilfontein. Kuno Clinic. But what is important, Chair, that day when I was in Klerksdorp Hospital, I've never seen in my life being one of the nursing personnel that even the nurses themselves, they were joining the Nehau to go and sing right. They were singing right in hospital during the time of the oversight. It was very scary. The patients, they didn't even know what to do. So it's so important that going forward, we need to make sure that the relationship between the labor unions and the Department of Health really must be something that is concrete, because it's affecting the progress and many people are dying. And Chair, I just wanted to find out, up to this stage, are we aware of what is the extent of the implications of the strike in terms of the health in the Northwest? Do we have any measure to say what is the extent? You also said that many patients, they have to be discharged. Up to this stage, do we know how many have died and all those things? Because definitely there were those that were on TV to say that after they were discharged or they were home, they died after some few days. Have we ever tried to make some follow-up? According to the presentation, Chair, it was clear that the financial report, from Program 1 to Program 8, there's a huge accrual. So, but something that we missed, if maybe you can give us if you can tell us what's your plan, what is it that you are going to do? Because it's huge, from all the programs, there's a lot of accruals. What is it that you are going to do? Chair, the other thing regarding EMS, I'll talk about Buthelezi specifically, because I have a written question that I've written to the minister.
regarding Bhutanese that is was operating even in Free State. One thing that he says to me, because I was questioning even the staff that are trained, they don't have even they are not even trained to deal with the emergency. They don't even have equipment. Some of Bhutanese ambulances just like a taxi to transport the patients. They don't have the required skills. But he said that the National Treasury, they are busy with the investigation. So I want to find out, are you aware about the investigation? What is the progress regarding this investigation? The other question, Chair, if maybe we can also be provided with the details on the value of the helicopter EMS contract and how much was it worth and for how long it has been running, what is the value of the money according to slide 59. That is, if maybe we can be told about that. My last question, Chair, it will be regarding the HOD. If maybe we can be given the update, what is the situation regarding the HOD of the department? Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Gonzo, and then the last one will be Honourable Mahlalela.
Thank you, Chair. I'm joining the colleagues in thanking the department for their presentation. I start by congratulating the department on the targets achieved, a couple of them. However, I have a question about the cataract surgeries and the rate thereof. I see here under challenges there is a mention of the fact that the appointments are being cancelled and due to non-functioning of theaters not functioning. I just wanted to know the latest in that regard, because if it continues like that, then we have a serious problem further and quite suffering in as far as patients are concerned. And there are other reasons that include the underlying medical conditions as a challenge. And maybe we could get clarity on that, on what exactly that means. Chair, another one is the CHWs employed, or are they provided with stipend? Yes. If yes, what is the term of their contract? And how far are you in as far as their employment is concerned? And then the other one about vacant posts, if we could get the priorities, there's priority number one, number two, number three, and maybe we could talk more on the breakdown of each of those, if you could do us that analysis. And the last one, Chair, is about the boards and the clinic committees that are functioning well. Excuse me. Well, reports, or I know, in some hospitals, boards are functioning, we are told, and clinic committees are functioning. You find it's only attending meetings, and then the rest is that the boards are supposed to be doing is actually attended to by the CEO and is actually running the show. So maybe you could tell us more as to what exactly you mean when you say the board and the clinic committees are functional. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Mashalil.
No, thank you very much. Just raise a few questions and comments. First, I just wanted to understand the because your slide 5 has got two programs. 4. I'm not sure which is which. But in the programs, there's only one program 4. What exactly does that mean? Because we've got two other program 4 there. And all of them have got 9 targets. The first program 4, it's achieved 7 out of 9. The second program 4 is achieved 9 out of 9. But in your slide number 32, you've got only one program 4. Though it's also written upside down. There's Kalenga program 5 phezulu, and there's program 4 below. I thought it should follow each other, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. But it's 4 on top. I mean, it's 4 below and 5 on top. I don't know what exactly does it mean. But there's no correlation of the two. 32 and that slide there on that is got this in slide 5. So I'm not sure whether program 4 is got 18. Indicators. Or it has got 9 because it's repeated twice and how many has been achieved in that program because the summary it's something else. And then the I'm not sure, Chair, the correctness of the achievement is reported because my concern is that there's no correlation between what is said to be achieved and the expenditure. There's no correlation. In Program 2, for example, you are at 54% achievement and they've only spent 20% and they've got an accrual of 355 million. Does that mean you have not paid you have not paid a single cent on accrual thus far in Program 2? Because you can't overachieve while you have accruals, and then you also underspend on the same program. It doesn't make sense. You've overachieved the first quarter. You've underspent. You had an accrual of 355 million. Which is which here? I don't understand it. Just talk to it so that one understand it. I don't understand it. That goes to program 3. You have underperformed 25%. The expenditure is 18%. You have got a 12.7 million accruals. It goes on just like that in all the problems. And no one has spoken about it so that we understand, because I don't understand it. You had an accrual, as you're saying, of close to 1 billion rand. And my understanding is that this accrual is for all the other things except compensation not in place. So if you go on your economic classification, on page 32, you take out COEs. Just 1.6 million out of the expenditure of, 1 billion, 1.6 billion out of an expenditure of 2 billion. You take that out, you remain with an expenditure of everything, that's your goods, your what, everything that is underneath there, of 518 million rand. On top of the 992 million accruals, because I will understand that 992 million come from all these, your goods, your rent, your transfers, your all those things. That's where it comes from. And then, if literally we say no, you will have paid for the accruals, you will still be left with an accrual of 473 million. If we'll just say no, we've used that money to pay accruals, but you didn't. So what is the state of accruals as we speak now? Because there's no way where you're talking about what is the current state of that accruals. And what intervention are you going to make to address this matter? And what are the impact of these accruals to business people, especially SMEs? How much has been paid thus far for accruals, if any has been paid? But there are things here that makes me to not to believe this thing that is being presented here to be a true reflection of what is happening. Besides the no correlation between the expenditure and what is said to have been the performance, is the reason that are being dominantly put as the reason for underperformance the strikes? But there was a strike that disrupted you not to do work, but you've overperformed in some areas. I don't understand the correlation. Doesn't make sense. Can't make sense. You've been disrupted. The reason why you are underspending in some areas is because there was strike. So if the strike is, there was nothing happening. But you have overachieved even compared to the first quarter of the previous year where there was no strike. Because the previous year where there was no strike, you were at 60%. And this year there is a strike and we're saying the strike is a problem. But you are at 63. It can't make logic. You achieved more than the first quarter of last year. There was no strike. You achieved far better this year. And we are saying, no, the reason why you better achieve, it was because of a strike. That's what literal word means. When there is a strike, you perform better. That's what we are telling us. Because, no, the strike has assisted you to be better in terms of performance. But we are saying, no, that's a problem. I don't understand it. If you can just clarify to us so that we're on the same wavelength, but I don't understand exactly what are you telling, what are you trying to tell us? The TB is a leading cause in the whole world, South Africa included. Is it possible just to tell us what is it, how, because I see you are not doing well, and we are, firstly, how much is allocated for TB? And then the measures that you are saying are remedial actions, or the problems that are currently making you to perform well, are they new? Were you doing better last year? And if you were doing better, what is it then? Is it the strike that made you not to do better? Or what? And the remedial action that you are putting in place, to what extent can you give assurance that it's going to address the problem of defaulters and the low rate and the low cure rate of TB in the province? One of the other issues that when we engage with the national department, they said it's done by provinces, but I've not seen non-communicable disease. It's a big, big problem in the country. Non-communicable disease. It's not there in your quarterly processes, in your quarterly plans and what. So you're not dealing with it. Who is dealing with it then? Because nationally, it's telling us, no, this thing is not in our plan because provinces are dealing with it, but it's not here in your plan. We are not reporting anything about it. How much is allocated for non-communicable diseases in the province? And what programs are there practical on the ground to be able to deal with these challenges? We're not talking about this, the CCMDD, just prevention, the programs that we're engaging upon to reduce the number of people who get affected as a result of this non-communicable disease. What plans are there in place, and why are they not in part of your indicators or your target? How are you addressing it? If they're not there, they're not reflected anywhere. How are you dealing with it? But the problem of cancer and all those things, how do you deal with that problem? Because it's not reflected anywhere. And you seem to have no emphasis on them at all. The I'm not sure, Mr. Hunter, is it legally acceptable to say, to deliver and say, no, we're going to overspend? The PFMA doesn't allow that. Section 38 of the PFMA says it's punishable, because you will be violating Section 38 of the PFMA. If you deliver and say, no, you take a deliberate decision. Because that's what you are telling us. But no, you are taking a deliberate decision to overspend. And that's illegal. And you know we've already passed the Audit Act. and you know what the new Audit Act says. If you deliberately overspend or deliberately violate the PFMA, there are consequences now. And once you deliberately overspend, it's not Treasury, unfortunately, that must approve the overexpenditure. It's Parliament that must do that. And you're telling us up front that, no, I'm going to overspend. And you will have to come back to Parliament, and Parliament must then authorize that unauthorized expenditure. I don't think it's correct. I will understand to say, no, we'll strive to make sure that we spend the money. And then once you spend the money, go back to trade and say, now we can't move, we spend the money. But to say, no, we're going to overspend. So that we put treasure under pressure. No, you're violating the law. You're not be putting treasure under pressure. We'll be violating the law. Unfortunately. And you'll be creating a wrong precedent. You'll be creating, because not that it's not West that is under pressure. All provinces are under pressure. All of them. We've gone to KZN. There's moratorium, they can't employ because they don't have the budget to employ. We've called provinces in June, all of them, they were telling us the same story. And all of them have got accruals, which amounts to millions, close to billions. Combined, it's about 16 billion. And then if we don't put prudent financial measures and system and say no, because we find ourselves in this situation, let's spend. Because already the 992 million, which is close to a billion rand, has been wrongly spent. Because in a true financial terms, that's not accrual, because they violated the PFMA, because they stopped paying in September, which means all the services that private sectors or business people were rendering from October to April were not being paid. That's more than 30 days long past. That's a violation on its own. And they are not being paid till now, some of them. Because if you look at the budget, that you spent for 518 for all the economy economic classification except compensation of employees, 518 million, versus the accruals of 992 million. It means there are a lot of service providers that have not been paid as far, since September. Almost a year not being paid, and there is no indication how, as an intervention of Section 100, you are addressing that matter, because that's a core problem. That's the main problem, these accruals. Until such time that there is a plan to address the accruals, we are not going to be able to deal with the problem. And I see there, under challenges, budget shortfall, but I don't see what is that is being done, because they're saying, no, there's a process of costing and all those things, but as if we didn't know that there's a problem. We're still trying to cost. We know already there's a problem of 992 million. That the province is indebted with. That whatsoever intervention of Section 100 should begin to see how then to deal with that matter of 992 million. So that you are able then to see how then to effectively use the budget that is allocated to the province, the 11 billion. Not the 11 billion minus. Because as long as you've got this 11 billion minus a billion rand, there will be always a shortfall, there will be always a problem. And then last, we don't get, because there is an indication that there are a lot of fraud that has been taking place in the supply chain process. But I'm not getting anybody telling us that no, we're dealing with this in this way, and we've suspended so many people, or we've referred so many cases to the police. so that the law must take its own course for those that have committed fraud. It can't be business as usual. There must be consequences. People must take responsibility for their action. People must understand that they must take responsibility, and they can only take responsibility if we become decisive. But as long as we are sugarcoating everything and not address the core business, the core issues that made Northwest to be where it is, you will come in like you did in Limpopo, left, the situation went back. It's going to happen, it's going to be a vicious cycle because there are no consequences. I mean, people must know that they must respect public peace. As long as you don't instill that people must respect public peace, they can't willy-nilly use public money and in the manner that they want to use it. You will go there, Section 100, leave. 6 months down the line, Northwest will go back where it was. And it's not going to help us. But that's what is very critical for me. I'm glad that coverage, I mean, members have asked this Telezi thing, because when I was asking the minister about it, about the investigation, as Honorable Kopano was saying, because I saw the response. You're saying, no, Treasurer is finding it difficult to get information from Northwest. Have you resolved that matter now? Because they're saying, no, it's difficult, there's no cooperation. They can't get the information that is needed to determine the extent to which, first and foremost, whether procurement to that Buthelezi was it proper. Secondly, to determine whether there was value for money. And why Buthelezi? Why was it EMS privatized, anything? Politically, why did you take that political decision to privatize EMS as an emergency services? You can just make us understand politically what informs that. What is it that you wanted to address that could not be addressed by the department that needed a private sector to come in and do the core business of government? Just make us to understand, all of us, so that we are able to be in the same wavelength, because we don't understand why that decision was taken to privatize EMS. And what has been the total financial implication? Not just what is the financial implication now. The total financial implication since the contract of Buthelezi. I don't know when it started, because I'm seeing here saying, no, it's going to be ending this month. What is the total cost that government has spent vis-a-vis what would have spent if it was provided by the department itself? Was it economical? Were you first and foremost saving, but secondly, was it providing the efficient and effective services that was needed on the ground, so that we're able to make sure that our people does receive the service that was expected of them. Thanks very much.
Honorable Adams. Thank you, Chair. To the department, on slide 10. District hospitals. On the challenges there, they mentioned that due to payment of accruals, it was mentioned shortage of funds, money was put on hold. So can the department explain how did they manage to fulfill their daily expenditure? And the second one is on page 11 and 13, also on challenges due to high death rate and loss of follow-up on patients. The remedial action, there is stated, allocated each patient a special treatment supporter. Can you explain that special treatment supporter to us? Because I don't understand that thing of special treatment supporter. Thank you.
No, thank you very much, honorable members. What we will do, we will, there was quite a number of questions, some of them very intense. We will allow you 10 to 15 minutes, we'll have a 10 to 15 minutes break. Who is going to answer, to respond? And then we will then come back to get responses from the department and also from the administrator. Thank you very much.
That thing is too good to be true.